First up is Sebastian Schlecht. He has received his diploma in applied math from the University of Trier, and he has a Master's of Science degree in digital music processing from the School of Electronic Engineering and Computer Science at Queen Mary University of London. That's a mouthful. He is currently pursuing the doctoral degree at the International Audio Laboratories in Erlangen, Germany, on the topic of spatial artificial reverberation and reverberation enhancement systems. Sebastian.
So thanks for having me, thanks for attending. So we've heard already a couple of hours about existing systems, and I hope I can increase a little bit the confusion, what to choose, what kind of technique to choose for increasing robustness. So I'm introducing a new animal into the zoo of stability techniques. So the title is Reverberation Enhancement Systems with Time-Varying Mixing Matrices. I'll repeat a little bit about reverberation enhancement systems in general, and then introduce the new time-varying processing scheme, and then an evaluation of this time variation within reverberation enhancement systems. So what is reverberation enhancements? We just heard it in a very impressive way downstairs. The idea is very simple, placing some microphones and loudspeakers in the room and doing a controlled feedback somehow from the microphones back to the loudspeakers. Why to use this? You may want to have some improvement of poor acoustical design, or want to have flexible acoustics, as we heard downstairs. And yeah, so the list of what you can do with a reverberation enhancement system is here, a little bit shorter than we've heard already today, so I don't repeat this again. So electroacoustic feedback isn't as dangerous. Yes, and for this, you have to foremost think about stability. This is, of course, a problem. And the little brother of stability is coloration. So if you get closer to instability, you already get this these colorations, these howling sounds. And so you not only want to have stability, you also want to have a certain distance to instability. There are different techniques like placement of microphones, loudspeakers, equalization, what you do normally in live sound, active feedback cancellation. This is a nice theoretic idea, but not really practical in high numbers of channels, and time variation. And there are already a couple of time variation techniques out there, frequency shifting a very early idea, then delay line modulation, all pass modulations, which are, I think, both used commercially, but they all have their shortcomings. I'm not saying that they don't working, but some at least theoretical problems there with frequency shifting. You're shifting the frequency, so this is not probably something you don't want to do with musical signals. With delay lines, you're normally changing the frequency response, so this is not flat anymore, what you're expecting from a delay line, so you're changing also the reverberation time spec. With the all-pass modulation, if you look closer, then you have to be careful to not make the all-pass modulation itself unstable. There's always something you have to be careful about. And in overall, the number of time-varying coefficients is linearly in the order of the system, so in the number of loudspeakers and microphones. And I think the order, the number of time-varying coefficients is also an indicator for how subtle the effect of modulation is. So if you have more of varying components, then it's more difficult to detect the movement over time. So I would like to introduce here a new technique, feedback matrix modulation. We've shown earlier that this is guaranteed to be stable, so it has some really nice theoretic properties, and it has a quadratic number of time-varying coefficients because it's a matrix, you get kind of the quadratic order. So here's the schematics of a reverberation enhancement system. For this, we can just concentrate on the feedback loop, GML times HLM. And here's kind of the mathematical way to put the Nyquist stability of the system for single channel. It's just that you want to have the feedback loop not encircling the point one. You can split this up in two criteria. The one is that the magnitude is not higher than one. I think that's the obvious one. And the other is that the phase is not zero at this point. So you get this positive feedback. For multi-channel systems, what you do is you have to decouple the system. And with an eigenvalue decomposition, for example. And then the characteristics functions, the end characteristic functions, you can again apply the single channel criteria. Gain before instability is then the important term, something where you measure how robust your system is. And that's one way to define this. You have the magnitudes response, either in single channel or the characteristic functions in the multi-channel. You do the histogram, the probability density of these magnitude values. So you're counting how much you have on a certain level. And then the cumulative density, which is 1 minus f to the power of k, and k is the number of independent frequency bins. There are a lot of details there, so I just go there quickly. The interpretation here is, for example, for 0.75, this is the probability here, 50%, that the maximum value of the magnitude response is higher than 0.75. So you have here some statistical valleys, and the gap here between 0.75 and the stability line at one, magnitude one, is the gap you can still increase the gain before instability. So time-varying processing, why does it help at all? Here are two frequency responses at two different time points, and you see that they are unstable in both instances. You have here 3 points, which are over the magnitude limit, and at the second time point, you have also some points which are over the limit, so both systems would be unstable if they are time invariant, but if you average these cases, then you get a stable system. Nothing is over the red line. This is just half of the truth. The other one, as I mentioned before, is how the phase behaves, but just as a quick intuition. So I would like to introduce here two types of processors. The one probably falls more into the category of regenerative reverberation enhancement, so it's just mixing the signals and feeding it back. And the other is the inline paradigm, so where we really put a full reverb in there. With the time-varying mixing matrix, so we take the microphone signals, mix them together, distribute them again, and send them back to the loudspeakers. I'm really sorry, there is... So in the brackets, there's always an N, so a time dependency. I'm sorry that this is missing. So for the time variation, we split up this eigenvalue domain, and U is the eigenvectors and lambda is the eigenvalues, and we are just changing the eigenvalues. Just a quick technical note, the matrix A is always real, because you're doing time domain processing, but the eigenvectors U and the eigenvalues lambda are typically complex to do this operation. And for the energy conservation, we want to have all the eigenvalues on the unit circle. This is the best point to start for stability. If we have the complex values on a fixed magnitude, the only thing we can change is angle. So we modulate this angle with a triangular wave, 3 different parameters, modulation frequency, modulation amplitude, and modulation spread is the deviation of the modulation frequency from a mean frequency we define. The starting values can be chosen arbitrarily. They will change over time anyway if you have different modulation frequencies. And I'm just stressing here again, this is you see here 4 different eigenvalue evolutions. But for this order, you would have n squared, so 16 different coefficients. This scales very nicely up to larger systems. For example, if you have 30 microphones and 30 loudspeakers, you have 900 different coefficients, which change independently from each other over time. So that's where this probably more subtle effect comes from. The full feedback matrix engine, the reverberation engine, is then created with a feedback delay network. The only extension in this very simple schematic is that you extend the feedback matrix with a number of delay lines. And this internal feedback loop already creates reverberation. That's something you use also for in-the-box reverberation. And one adjustment we've done here to maximize the effect of the time variation is that we change where we take the loudspeaker output. In the standard formulation, you normally take the loudspeaker output from the delay lines. But then you have the problem that there's a path which doesn't go through the matrix, so you just switch this. Very simple trick, and take the loudspeaker output from the output of the matrix. So you ensure that every signal which goes through the FDN also goes through the time variation. Some evaluation. We've chosen a small office space. With a mean reverberation time of half a second, place four loudspeakers and four microphones. This is mainly chosen because we wanted to have somehow a comparison to an older study with a different time variation. So it's not a typical use case, I would say. And three types of room acoustics. One is anechoic, just where we have just a direct sound between loudspeakers and microphones, and then a synthetic impulse response, where there's white noise decaying over half a second, and an actually measured room impulse. The matrix modulation is then parameterized with an amplitude between 0 and 2, and mean frequency from 0 to 3 hertz, and a frequency spread of 10%. So, for example, if we have a mean frequency of 3 hertz, we spread them from 2.7 hertz to 3.3 hertz. The feedback delay network has an order of 8, so 8 delay lines, and here we can specify the reverberation time, as we heard in the inline system. So the reverberation time was 1.5 seconds, three times of the physical reverberation time we have in the room. And here are some GBIs, gain before instabilities, under time variation. The three conditions, anechoic, synthetic, and measured impulse responses. And on the x-axis, we have modulation frequency. And on the y-axis, we have modulation amplitude. On the lower left corner, we have the time invariant case, or to be exact, on the axis, we have the time invariant case, because either of the modulation frequency and amplitude is zero. And then if we raise to the top right, we increase modulation. And the GBIs here plotted on these along these lines. For example, here it goes from minus 4 dB to probably roughly minus 1.5 dB. And in all three cases, you see that there's a similar basic shape about how GBI increases with these two parameters. Most importantly, you can see that the measured impulse response has a generally lower GBI, which obviously comes from the frequency peaks you have on a measured impulse response, which are a lot stronger than in a synthetic case or in an anechoic case. Interesting here is that the anechoic case and the synthetic case are not really different, which is very counterintuitive if you think about a single channel where you would get perfect a maximum GBI for the anechoic case. If you introduce more channels, then this is not true anymore. And here's the GBI with time-varying feedback delay networks. The most obvious thing is here you have a lot more lines, so the net improvement you have is more, but you're also starting at a lower level. You're starting at a lower level because the FDN also introduces frequency peaks compared to the mixing matrix. So just picking out the measured impulse response case, as I pointed out, we're starting with a lower value for GBI, have a bigger increase in the feedback delay network case, but the top value for the GBI is pretty similar. summarizing this again into a table with more concrete numbers, with no time variation, we have minus 13 dB and minus 10 dB for feedback, delay network, and mixing. And with the maximum time variation of 3 Hz and 2 amplitude, we have then minus 6 and a little bit less than minus 6 dB, and an improvement of 7.3 and 3.1 dB. This 7.3 dB is then an improvement of 30% compared to an earlier study, which had 5.6 dB for a time-varying all-pass FDN. The time-varying all-pass FDN is where you extend all the delay lines with a comp feed-forward feedback all-pass, and then modulating the feedback for feed-forward gains over time. So yeah, there's some improvement. And wrapping this up, so we've proposed two types of processors, the regenerative and the non-regenerative mixing and feedback delay network, an optimized version of the feedback delay network in this context, and just introduce a new processing which has a quadratic number of time-varying coefficients. And the simulation shows that we can go up to 7.4 dB of GBI improvement, and which is a 30% increase to a comparable situation with a different technique. Some open questions. One is, okay, we have now these different types of time variation. What are the perceptual effects of them, and how can we rate them? What are there different cases where we would like to use one or the other? Our claim is, of course, that with this high number of time-varying coefficients, you will get some better results in how obvious these modulations are. But of course, we have to do more scientific proof of this. And the other is how do we tune these modulations? So do we want to have more modulation frequency and less amplitude, or the other way around? And how does it scale with the dimension of the matrix? So this concludes my talk. I hope it wasn't too fast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian. We probably have time for a very quick question while Doyen comes up and gets ready.
Yeah.
When you hear the sound, did you hear any artifacts? Because I see that you have...
So the question is whether there are some... Yeah, so 3 Hz is quite a lot. For critical signals like piano or so. So this is way too much. But this is also, a lot of these conditions are because of this earlier study. Normally you would just raise the number of loudspeakers, and then it gets really difficult to hear these effects.
Okay, thank you, Sebastian.